agree that this little accident never happened. We, my brother and I, will pretend you never broke into our van. You'll pretend you never saw Jaybird. We'll all just erase the last few hours from our brains. And when the snow plows rumble up here at the ass crack of dawn, we'll all just hop into our cars and go our separate ways. A peaceful resolution for everyone. Pop, pop. Lars opened the buttons on her wallet. Credit cards click-clacked to the floor. He sniffed, checking out her Utah driver's license, and unfolded a crumpled 20, which he pocketed. 10 seconds. I'll be honest, Ashley leaned forward. I'm really, really hoping you'll just look the other way. Get some rest. You're tired. You look like boiled crap. You won't stand a chance against Lars and me. So just let the monsters do their thing, okay? 5 seconds. Please, Darbs. It'll be easier on all of us. He glanced at Sandy as he said this, as if his threat wasn't already clear enough. Darby felt her cheeks burn. I can't. We won't hurt Jay, you know. He cocked his head. Is that it? Is that what you're afraid of? Because if so, I can promise you, you're lying. No one will get hurt tonight, if you cooperate. I know you're lying. She'll be fine, Ashley said, waving his hand. Hey, by the way, I saw a bunch of papers in the back seat of your car. Black papers. What's all that? Why do you care? His eyes hardened. You peeked into Garver family business, so I peeked into yours. Answer the question. It's just papers. For what? Gravestone rubbings. What are those? I use crayons to make an imprint of headstones.
Why?
Because I collect them.
Why?
I just do. She hated being studied by him.
You're kind of a damaged girl, Ashley said. I like it.
She said nothing.
And you have a scar over your eyebrow.
He leaned over the table, inspecting her in the fluorescent light.
That must have been, what, 30 stitches? It's only really noticeable when you furrow your brow. Or smile.
She stared at the floor.
Is that why you don't smile much, Darbs?
She wanted to cry. She wished it would be over. Smile, he whispered. You'll live longer. It's been over a minute. Where the hell was Ed? Possibilities cycled through her mind. Maybe he couldn't find the camping coffee. Maybe he was sneaking in a drink. Or maybe he'd detected some subtle clue, pieced together the kidnapping plot, and now he was attempting to find cell signal to contact the police right now. Or what if Jay cut through the kennel bars and ran to him? He'd be a second witness. That would give Ashley and Lars no choice but to start shooting. Every second felt volatile. She glanced up at the Garfield clock, and Ashley noticed.
That's an hour fast, you know.
I know.
It's only 1 o'clock.
I know. He licked his lips, studying the clock. The image on it, of a love-struck Garfield offering roses to Arlene.
Hey, what's that cat's name? The pink one.
Arlene.
Arlene. That's a pretty girl's name. Like yours.
Yours too, she said. He smirked, enjoying the back and forth, glancing back at her eyebrow.
How'd you get the scar, anyway?
A fight, she lied. In junior high.
She'd crashed her bicycle into a garage door. If it could be called a fight, the garage door had won.
28 stitches and an overnight at St. Joseph. The other fifth graders had called her Franken-girl. She couldn't tell if Ashley believed her. He licked his lips.
I should warn you, Darbs, if you're, you know, planning on fighting us tonight. Are you? Am I what? Planning to fight us? I'm thinking about it. Well, if you are, you should know. I've always been kind of special. I bet you are. See, I'm not just lucky. I'm protected, I think, from consequences. It's like a magic I have. In the end, things always go my way. He leaned in closer, like he was imparting a delicate secret. You might call it luck, but I sincerely believe it's something else. My toast always lands jelly side up, you could say. She had to ask. You don't really have asthma, do you? Nope. Do you even go to Salt Lake Institute of Tech? His grin widened. Made up school. What about your phobia of doors? Door hinges. That one's true, actually. Really? Yeah, they give me the creeps. He held his hand over his heart. Swear to God, can't touch 'em. Try not to look at 'em. Ever since I lost my thumb down in Chink's Drop, they've just bothered the hell out of me.
Regular door hinges.
Yeah.
I was certain you'd made that up, too. It didn't seem real.
Why not?
Because, Darby said calmly, I didn't think you'd be such a pussy. A board creaked. Ashley looked back at her coldly, like she'd defied his initial assessment, and the lights flickered overhead. Then he sighed, swallowed once, and when he finally spoke again, his voice was tightly controlled.
You're gambling with a child's life. Don't forget that. Tonight has a happy ending, but you're jeopardizing it.
I don't believe you.
It's not a sex thing, Ashley said, frowning with exaggerated disgust. It's money, if you just have to know.
Sandy stirred again on the bench. Luck of the devil slid a few centimeters down her face. Darby wondered if she was really asleep. What if she was only pretending? What if she'd heard the whole conversation?
I mean, tell you what.
Ashley suppressed a laugh, loosening up again. His demeanor came in chilling phase changes, light to dark and back again.
You should see this house, Darbs. Looks like Mr. Burns's mansion.
Daddy owns a tech startup,
something to do with a video player, you know, computer shit, which is over my blue-collar head. I'm more of a practical nuts-and-bolts guy, which is why we're borrowing Jaybird here, taking her out to the Rockies for a few weeks, letting Mommy and Daddy get real worried and whip out their checkbooks. And once we're fairly compensated for our work, we'll cash out and leave her at a bus station in some shit-splat town in Kansas. She won't be harmed. It'll be like a vacation. Hell, maybe we'll even teach her how to snowboard while we're...
You're lying again. His folksy grin vanished.
I already told you, Darbs. Try to keep up. We won't hurt her.
You already hurt her. She snarled, half hoping Sandy was really awake under her paperback, really listening. You shot a goddamn nail through her hand. And I swear to God, Ashley, if I get the chance, I'll do worse to you. Silence. At the door, Lars slipped her wallet back into her purse.
So, Ashley paused. You saw Jay's hand?
Yes. He considered this for a few moments, sucking his lower lip again with a lizard slurp.
Okay, good.
He hardened. Another eerie phase change.
Good. Good. Great. Even. Let's call this a teachable moment, okay? If it's in my best interests to keep Jaybird alive, shaken, but alive, and yesterday morning I got sick of her whining and put a cordless nailer to her palm and pulled the trigger, well, Darbo, just imagine what I'll do to someone who I don't have to keep alive. Imagine what I'll do to this rest stop, what I'll do to Ed and Sandy. What I'll make you watch. And it'll all be your fault. Because you felt too morally superior to play ball here. So I'm asking you again, Darby. And I'm warning you, too. Think long and hard about what you say next, because if it's the wrong thing, I promise you, you won't be the only one who dies tonight. She stared back at him, afraid to blink. Also, he added, your nose is bleeding. She touched her nose. He lunged forward, grabbed a fistful of her hair, and slammed her face into the tabletop. Fireworks behind her eyes, dizzying pain. The cartilage in her nose made a wet crunch, and she recoiled backward, nearly falling off her chair, clasping both hands to her face. Across the room, Sandy jolted awake. Her paperback clapped to the floor.
What? What happened?
Nothing, nothing, Ashley said, looking at Darby. We're fine.
Darby nodded, pinching her nose. Hot blood dribbled down her wrists, vivid red. Her eyes stung, fighting back tears. Don't cry.
Oh, honey, your nose. Yeah, I'm fine.
Darby tasted coppery blood in her teeth. Big drops tapped the tabletop. Her fingers stuck together.
What happened?
High altitude, Ashley said crisply. Low air pressure. It just sneaks up on you. My nose was bleeding like a faucet back at Elk Pass.
Sandy ignored him.
Need a tissue?
Darby shook her head sharply, squeezing her nostrils. Blood poured down her throat in clogged mouthfuls. Droplets speckled her lap.
Oh, Jesus, don't cry.
Sandy crossed the room, her big purse swinging. She grabbed a lump of brown napkins from the coffee counter and laid them in Darby's lap. She touched her shoulder.
Are you sure? It's really bleeding.
Darby felt her face tighten up, like her skin was being stretched taut around her skull, fiery heat on her cheeks. Her vision blurred with tears, her breaths hissing through her teeth, while Ashley calmly watched her from across the table, with his hands tucked neatly in his lap.
Don't cry, Darby, or he will kill everyone here.
I'm fine, she choked. It's just the elevation.
I had my first beer at 8,000 feet,
Ashley chimed in again.
Sliced my hand on a fluorescent light. And I bled pure red water for 2 straight days.
Oh, shut up, Darby snarled. He froze, startled by her sudden ferocity. This should have been another win for Darby, another small moment of prey catching Predator off guard. But she already knew it was a huge mistake, because Sandy had noticed. The lady hesitated, palms up. She glanced between them, her yellow parka crinkling as she moved.
Wait, what's really happening here?
Silence. Ashley chewed his lip thoughtfully, and then nodded to Lars.
No, no, no. Lars reached into his coat pocket for his pistol, but the front door banged open beside him, hitting the wall, startling him.
Finally found the coffee.
Ed came in, boots squeaking, spattered with snowflakes, and slammed a clipped baggie of ground Colombian roast on the table between them.
The recipe is 2 tablespoons for every 8 ounces of boiling. Oh, holy shit, that's blood.
The altitude, Darby choked.
Sandy said nothing.
Damn, Ed looked Darby up and down. You really got it. Keep pressure on your nose and lean forward, not backward.
She tilted her head forward.
Good. Forward makes it clot. Backward, it all pours down your throat and you get a stomach full of blood.
He brushed snow from his shoulders.
And use those napkins. They're free.
Thanks.
As Ed moved past, Darby glanced over to Sandy, bridging a moment of shaky eye contact. Sandy was suspicious now, eyes wide, glancing between the two brothers. The outline of Lars's concealed pistol was plainly shadowed in the overhead light. Darby raised an index finger to her lips.
"Shh."
Sandy nodded once. At the same time, Ashley must have been making a hand signal to Lars. Darby turned back and only caught the end of it, but it looked like a frenzied hand-to-throat gesture. "Stop, stop, stop." That was it. The room had just been a split second from exploding into violence. Ed had no clue that he might have just saved everyone's lives by bumbling back inside when he did with a bag of instant coffee. Now, he reached through the security shutter and dispensed hot water.
"It's not quite boiling, but it's hot enough for tea. Should be okay for some shitty coffee."
"Mana from heaven," said Ashley. "Sweet, sweet caffeine."
"Yep, that's the idea."
"You're my hero, Ed."
He nodded, his patience for Ashley's chit-chat clearly wearing thin.
"Good to hear."
Sandy backed up and sat on a corner bench, where she could monitor the entire room. Darby watched her lift her paperback, but hold it in her lap, her other hand tucked carefully inside her purse, behind the embroidered letters of Psalm 100, verse 5. Gripping a canister of pepper spray, perhaps? "Please, Sandy, don't say anything." The Wanapani rest area was a powder keg. All it would take is a single spark. And this room was full of friction. Carefully, out of view, Darby opened the "If you tell them, I kill them both" note in her lap, beneath the tabletop, and wrote another message against her thigh. She capped her pen and folded the napkin tightly, leaving a bloody thumbprint.
"Who else wants coffee?" Ed asked.
"Me," said Lars.
Sandy nodded, but didn't speak. "Me too," Darby said as she stood up, gripping her sore nose and handing the note to Ashley, then turning to face Ed. "No sugar, no cream. And make it strong, please. Tonight is going to be one hell of a long night." Behind her, she heard Ashley greedily unfold the napkin. He was reading her message now. 1:02 a.m. "You win. I won't say a word." Ashley smirked. She had no idea how right she was. This CU Boulder girl was an unexpected complication, but he'd already figured her out. He'd seen her type before, although never in the flesh. See, Darby Elizabeth Thorne was a bona fide hero. She was one of those bystanders on a Shell Station CCTV tape who goes for the robber's gun or renders aid to a bleeding clerk. She was the type who'd throw herself under the meat grinder wheels of a train to save a total stranger. Protecting others, doing the right thing, was an instinct for her, whether she knew it or not. Contrary to popular belief, that's not a strength. It's a weakness, because it makes you predictable, controllable. And sure enough, with just a 30-minute conversation, a half-round of circle time, and an aborted card game, Ashley already owned her. Breaking her nose? That was just a fun little victory lap. And he'd been surprised by how much he enjoyed watching Darby fight tears in front of Ed and Sandy, her nose a spurting red faucet. There was something great about it, something he couldn't quite put his finger on. She was humiliated, suffering in public, like some of his favorite porn. He loved the ones where the girl was secretly wearing vibrating panties in a street or restaurant, trying not to show it, trying to hold back. It helped that Darby was undeniably pretty, too, in a feral way. She had a ferocity to her, a vicious streak to go with her fiery auburn hair. She didn't know how tough she could be if pushed to the edge. He'd love to take her there. He'd love to take her up in Wrathdrum, to drive her out to the gravel pit and teach her how to fire his uncle's SKS, brace the wooden Soviet stock up to her little shoulder, guide her painted fingernail around the trigger, whiff her nervous sweat as she aligned the notched iron sights. Such a bummer, then, that he'd have to kill her tonight. He didn't want to. Ashley Garver had never technically killed anyone before, so tonight would be a definite first. The closest instance he could think of was still more manslaughter than murder, and not via direct action, but inaction. He'd been a kid when it happened. This was a year or two before he nearly lost his thumb at Chink's Drop, so he'd been 5, maybe 6. Back then, his parents used to offload him and Lars, just a toddler then, in the summer months, with Uncle Kenny, who lived in the dry prairies of Idaho. He called himself Fat Kenny.
Hey, hey, hey!
Which Ashley only now understood was a riff on Fat Albert. He was a jolly man who huffed when he climbed stairs, smoked clove cigarettes, and always had a joke on hand.
What do you tell a woman with a black eye? Shoulda listened. What do you tell a woman with 2 black eyes? Nothing. She's already been told twice.
Each year, Ashley had returned to grade school armed with an arsenal of killer jokes. Every September, he'd been the most popular kid on the playground, letting them go viral. By October or so, the school district had always held an emergency assembly about tolerance. But there was a lot more to Uncle Kenny than his rip-roaring funnies. He also owned an on-site diesel station on a single-lane highway south of Boise, popular with truckers and nobody else. Ashley used to climb the apple trees with Lars and watch the 18-wheelers roll in and out. Sometimes they parked on Kenny's land, chewing muddy divots in the yellow grass, arriving late at night and leaving early in the morning. They rarely entered Uncle Kenny's house, though. They went to his storm cellar. It was like a fallout bunker, a single hatch door protruding from the weeds 20 yards from the laundry room. This submarine door was always, always padlocked. Until one morning when, under a gauze of damp fog, he'd found it wasn't. So he'd gone inside. Ashley remembered few details about the dark room at the bottom of the long, rotten staircase. Mostly just the odors. A musty, sweet staleness that was simultaneously putrid and oddly alluring. He'd never smelled anything like it since. Cold cement under his feet. Electrical cords on the floor. Big lights set up on tripods. Indistinct shapes, lurking in the dark. He'd just been leaving, climbing back up the stairs, when a woman's voice called out to him. Hey. He'd turned, nearly tripping. He waited for a long moment, half on the stairs, half off, goose flesh prickling on his arms, wondering if he'd just imagined it. Until finally, the female voice spoke again. Hey there, little boy. This had been a shock. He hadn't known how the woman in the cellar could possibly see him. It was pitch black down there. Only as an adult could Ashley begin to reason that her pupils had been adjusted to the darkness, while his weren't. Like Darby's crafty little shut-one-eye trick. You're a nice boy, aren't you? He'd cowered there on the steps, covered his ears. No, don't be afraid. You're not like them. The ghostly voice lowered, like she was divulging a secret. Can you please help me with something? He'd been afraid to answer.
Can you bring me a glass of water?
He wasn't sure.
Please?
Finally, he gave in and raced back up the rotten steps, ran back to his uncle's rancher, and filled a blue glass in the kitchen sink. The tap water tasted like iron out here. When he came back outside, Uncle Kenny was standing by the open cellar door, his hands braced on his flabby hips. Little Ashley froze, spilling some water. But Uncle Kenny wasn't angry. No, he was never angry. He'd been all jolly smiles, showing yellow horse teeth, plucking the glass from Ashley's petrified little fingers.
Thanks, kiddo. It's all right. I'll take this down to her. Hey, why don't you go walk your baby brother down to the gas station and grab yourselves 2 chicken flautas? On the house.
The flautas had been dry as sandpaper, withered by the heat lamp. Lars didn't mind, but Ashley couldn't finish his. That same year, a month or two later, Ashley had returned to Uncle Kenny's a second time for Memorial Day weekend. And he remembered finding that same cellar door propped wide open, with a rattling fan blowing air out. When he descended the steps this time, he found the lights on, revealing a bare, gutted bunker, the concrete walls damp with condensation, scrub marks on the floor, the acrid odor of bleach. The woman was gone. Long gone. Even at that age, Ashley had known he should confront his uncle about this, or better yet, tell his parents and let them call the police. And he'd come very close, sitting on that knowledge all weekend like a loaded gun. But that Saturday night, Fat Kenny made macaroni and cheese with jalapenos and whole slices of bacon in it, and told a joke so epically funny, it made Ashley spray a half-chewed mouthful.
Hey, Ashley, how can you tell a nigger has been on your computer?
How?
Your computer's missing.
In the end, he'd simply liked Fat Kenny too much. He was too much fun. And he was genuinely decent to 4-year-old Lars, too. Letting him carry tools to the workshop, teaching him how to shoot crows with a BB gun. So bottom line, whatever those truckers were doing with the woman in the bunker ultimately didn't matter to Ashley. He'd just filed it away in a dark corner of his brain. That was 17 years ago. And now, at the Wanapani Rest Area in Colorado, on the frigid night of December 23rd, these roles were shuffled, like a classic TV show, returning with a cast of new actors. Ashley himself was the new Fat Kenny, scrambling to protect a damaging secret. And Darby was the accidental witness. History didn't quite repeat itself, but damn, it sure can rhyme. Ed reached behind the chattering security grate, testing the hot water dispenser, and then separated 2 bags of coffee grounds.
I've got a dark French roast and a light.
Either's fine, said Sandy.
Dark roast, please, Ashley said. As dark as it gets.
He didn't actually have a preference. He just liked how dark roast sounded. His taste buds were more or less dead, so all coffee tasted the same to him. But hell, if there was ever a night for jet black coffee, this would be it. He stuffed Darby's brown napkin into his jeans pocket, noticing it was smeared with a crescent thumbprint of her blood. He realized he'd lost sight of her. Quickly, he scanned the room. Ed was there by the locked coffee stand. Sandy was seated like a fat yellow bumblebee. Lars was guarding the front door. But yes, Darby was gone. She'd vanished. She'd taken advantage of his inattention and made a move. But it was fine. No worries. Ashley Garver would just make a move, too.
Restroom?
Restroom. He nodded to his brother.
Darby knew she only had a few seconds. She closed the men's restroom door behind her without breaking stride, passing the stained sinks, her doppelganger following her in the mirrors, scar visible like a white sickle, haunted eyes in the glass. Yes, the Whanapani rest area was a pressure cooker. She'd almost gotten Ed and Sandy killed. She needed to get out. She needed to reframe this battle, to relocate it somewhere else, somewhere without the risk of collateral damage. I'll run, she decided. I'll run up the highway, as fast and as hard as I possibly can. I won't stop until I find signal and call 911. Or I've frozen to death. She checked her iPhone again. The battery was now 2%. She looked up at the empty window, a triangular little slice of night sky and treetops. It was almost 8 feet off the floor. Getting inside had been easy, thanks to the stacked picnic tables outside. Getting outside would be so much harder. Even on her tiptoes, she couldn't reach the window frame. She needed one hell of a flying leap to catch it with her fingertips. She'd need a running start, and every inch of it. She backed up, past the green stalls, past Peyton Manning takes it in the ass, all the way back to the door, her back touching the wall, and the rectangular restroom stretched out before her like a 20-foot runway. Smooth, linoleum under her feet, slippery with moisture. She arched her back, dug into a runner's crouch, and closed her hands into fists. She took a full breath, the bitter smell of ammonia. She let it half out. Go! She ran. Mirrors, urinals, stall doors all racing past her. Air whooshed in her ears. No time to overthink. No time to be afraid. She flattened her hands into blades, pumping her legs, and took a hurtling, kamikaze leap at the tiny opening. Mid-air, she thought, this is going to hurt. It did. She crashed into the tile wall, knees first, bruising her chin, punching the air from her lungs. But, yes, she'd caught the window frame with two desperate fingertips, fingernails in the soggy old wood. She braced her wet Converse against the wall. Then she re-arched her back, locked her elbows, and tugged her body upward, gasping through clenched teeth, like the world's most hellish chin-up bar, and pulled and pulled and pulled. She heard mouth breathing. Outside. No. No, no, no. Please don't be real. But yes, there it was, directly outside, on the other side of the wall. That gentle wheeze she knew all too well. That juicy little huff. Lars, rodent face, had circled around the building and now waited for her outside. Watching that window, pistol in hand, ready to put a bullet in her brain the instant she clambered up and exposed her face. Now what? She hung there on aching fingertips, her shoes dangling 3 feet off the floor, desperately wishing she'd just misheard the growl of wind outside. But she knew she hadn't. She knew Ashley had sent obedient little Lars out there to cut off her escape, which left a far more cunning and dangerous enemy unaccounted for. Then she heard the restroom door click shut. He's in the room with... A plastic bag tugged over Darby's face from behind. She screamed, but it was trapped inside her mouth. 1:09 a.m. Jay Nissen sawed through the last bar on the dog kennel. She'd cut them one at a time, sawing with the toothed knife the way the red-haired young woman had instructed, like a miniature tree cutter. Her left hand throbbed with pins and needles, so it took a long time. Twice, she dropped the knife and had to grope for it in the darkness. Once, she'd feared it had bounced outside the kennel and been lost forever. But she found it. And now, with a push,
The grating fell away and clattered against the van's door. This was the first time the cage had been open since they took her. She didn't know how many days ago. She hadn't been counting. Going more than a night without her shots made her woozy. And since then, she'd fallen into an irregular rhythm of sickly 4-hour naps. The sun had been up and down, rising and falling from different windows. The smell of ketchup, ranch sauce, and stale sweat dewing on glasses. The crumple of jack-in-the-box wrappers, their murmuring voices. Ashley's knee-slapping jokes. The hum of blacktop. The urgent tick of the van's turn signal. Could it have been a week already? What were her parents doing right now? Her Wii U controller had been charging when they came to her house. She'd been plugging the gray wire into the Nintendo port when a single sharp knock came from the front door, like a tennis ball. She'd scurried to the door and opened it a few inches. There's a little brass chain the door catches on. And that was when she first saw him, the one she now knew as Lars. Back then, he hadn't developed his head cold yet. He'd smiled thickly down and told her he was here with the Fox Roofing Service, that her father, Mr. Pete, had given them permission to enter the house. Jay said no. Lars had asked her a few more times, in a few different ways. He seemed to think Mr. Pete was at the grocery store, which was false. Her father had called from the office to tell her the babysitter had the flu and that there was leftover Mongolian grill in the fridge. Even then, Jay got the impression that Lars wasn't like other adults in her life. She suspected that even at her age, she was already smarter than he might ever be. Lars asked less politely, leaning in. His teeth smelled like dead leaves. Jay shut the door. When she turned around, the one she now knew as Ashley was sitting at the oval kitchen table. His boots had left muddy prints on the parquet. He'd looked up at her casually, munching a handful of banana chips from the ceramic bowl. She still didn't know how he got inside the house. A window, maybe? The garage? She ran for the living room. She didn't make it. Here and now, Jamie Nissen, or Jay, as she'd gone by since first grade, crawled out of the dog kennel on her palms, over the itchy blankets and towels her rescuer had hidden beneath 2 hours ago. The metal bars bent and twanged around her. She hoped Ashley and Lars weren't nearby to hear. She reached the rear door of the van, expecting it to be locked. Lars had always been careful to relock the van doors. Every time he... The handle clicked in her bloody fingers. The door swung open. Jay froze there on her hands and knees, looking out into the darkness. Thousands of swirling snowflakes, a shivery gust of night air, a parking lot of smooth, undisturbed white, glittering with crystals. It was strangely thrilling. She'd never seen this much snow before in her entire life. Now what?
Now what, Darbs?
She couldn't breathe or see. Plastic stretched tight over her face, suctioning against her front teeth. Knuckled hands around her throat, twisting the bag, squeezing her airway shut. Slippery, buried alive panic. Shh, shh. She thrashed, but Ashley was too strong. He had her arms twisted backward in some kind of wrestling hold. Both of her shoulder blades were wrenched ajar, and her hands were somewhere far behind her, pinned and useless, like fighting the embrace of a straitjacket. She kicked, her feet searching for the restroom wall to use as leverage, but found only empty space. Her backbone cracked.
"Don't fight," he whispered. "It's all fine."
Pressure building inside her chest, her lungs burning, swelling against her ribcage. She felt her own last breath,
a half-gasp that had been inside her throat when the bag came down, trapped against her face, foggy and wet, warm copper spreading down her chin. Her nose was bleeding again. She fought again, twisting, flailing. Her legs kicked out into space, her fingers clawed and scratched. She found the loop of the lanyard in his jacket. Keys jingled, but there was no gun, no weapons to grab. She was losing energy, too. This thrash had been weaker than the first. "This is it," she realized. "I'm going to die here." Right here, in a dingy restroom off State Route 7, next to the bleached toilets, the carved mirrors, the peeling stall doors scrawled with graffiti. Right here, right now, with that Lysol taste still in her mouth. "Shh," Ashley moved his head, like he was checking over his shoulder. "It's almost over. Just let it happen," she screamed silently inside the Ziploc bag. The plastic flexed a small bubble. Then her lungs reflexively inhaled, a bracing gulp, but found only negative pressure, sucking a scant few centimeters of reused air. "I know it hurts, I know. I'm sorry." The bag twisted tighter, clockwise. And now she saw the window, through one clamped eye, blurred by cloudy plastic and tears. She saw that little triangular window, 8 feet off the floor, dusted with snowflakes. So close. So agonizingly close. Somehow, she wished it were further away, across the room, hopeless and unreachable. But no, it was right there, and she could almost reach out and touch it, if her hands weren't pinned. She thrashed a third time, but it was uncoordinated and limp. This time Ashley barely had to hold her. She knew this was the last one, that there couldn't possibly be a fourth rally. She was a goner now. Ed and Sandy were in the same building, on the other side of a wall, 10 feet away, oblivious while she suffocated to death in the arms of a killer. She felt time dilate, a thick and comfortable rest settled over her, like a heavy wool blanket. She hated how good it felt. "Rest now." Ashley planted a wet smooch on top of her head, crinkling the plastic. "You tried real hard, Darbs. Get some rest now." His revolting voice was so far away now. It sounded like he was in another room, speaking to someone else, smothering some other girl to death. The ache in her lungs was already fading. All of these awful sensations were happening to someone else, not Darby Thorne. Her mind wandered now, disconnecting, drifting, taking stock of all the unfinished items in her life. Her capstone painting, incomplete. Her Stafford loans, unpaid. Her Gmail password, locked forever. Her bank account, with $291 in it. Her dorm room. Her wall of gravestone rubbings. Her mother, at Utah Valley Hospital, awakening from surgery, about to learn that her daughter had been randomly murdered at a rest stop, 200 miles away from... No. She fought it. No, no, no. She held on to this. On to 49-year-old Maya Thorne, languishing in the ICU. Because if Darby died right here, right now, in this restroom, she'd never get to apologize for all the things she'd said to her mother on Thanksgiving. It would all become unchangeable history. Every ugly word of it. And suddenly, she wasn't afraid. Not anymore. She tasted something far more useful than fear. Anger. She was livid. She was absolutely fucking furious at the unfairness of it all. Of what Ashley was attempting to do to her and her family.
raging hard against the enveloping darkness. And something else. If I die here, she knew, no one will save Jay.
Darbs?
She arched her back and commanded her weary lungs to do one more final task. To open and inhale as hard as possible. To suck the plastic airtight against her open mouth so it was contracted against her front teeth like bubblegum. Just a thin, withdrawn centimeter. She bit down. Not hard enough. The plastic slipped out of her mouth. Pancreatic cancer? Ashley's lips slithered against her ear, like he'd read her mind. Your mom has, you said, pancreatic cancer, right? She tried again. She sucked the bag taut with burning lungs. Bit down. Nothing. Isn't it funny, then? His dense grip. His rotten voice. You were so certain you'd bury your mom, but it turns out you had it backwards, you dumb cunt. Because she's going to bury you. Darby bit down again, and the plastic ripped. A pinprick of ice-cold air whistled inside, racing down her throat in a pressurized rush, like inhaling through a straw. Ashley paused.
Oh.
And in a half-second of confusion, his grip weakened, and Darby's shoes touched the floor. A half-second was all she needed. She found her footing, kicked off the tile, and hurled her body backwards into his. Ashley stumbled, off balance. She kept running backward, kept pushing him. He gasped,
"Wait, wait, wait!"
She rammed him, back first into a sink, vertebrae against porcelain. The faucet clicked on. He grunted and released, her arms twisting from his grip. Her hands finally free, she grabbed the wet bag and ripped it off her face, sucking in a full breath. An inverted scream, clogged with blood, snot, and tears. She saw color again, air on her cheeks, oxygen in her blood. She fell away from him, her knees mushy, catching herself on the floor with an outstretched palm. Cold tiles, speckled with her blood. Behind her, Ashley pulled something from his pocket. He raised an arm, and he swung the rock in a sock at the back of Darby's head, arcing the stone like a whipping bola, ready for the wet porcelain crunch of the girl's skull. But she was already scrambling forward, moving away. It swiped her hair. He lunged after her, off balance from his swing, the rock banging off the wall to his left, leaving a ceramic chip. He hit his knees and watched her break away and sprint down the restroom, toward that little triangular window, with the plastic bag fluttering behind her. She won't make it, he told himself. But in another instant, she'd vaulted up to the window frame, caught herself by her fingernails, and hurled her body through the tiny opening like a gymnast, ankles up, then out. Just like that, she was gone. Ashley Garver was suddenly alone in the restroom. He staggered upright, nearly slipping on the blood-stained Ziploc bag. It didn't matter, he realized, slicking his hair back with a palm, catching his breath. He'd assigned Lars outside the back wall, by the stacked picnic tables, for this very situation. His brother, armed with that trusty Beretta Cougar, was the backup. Darby had escaped his kill zone in the restroom, yes, but in doing so, she'd practically dropped herself into Lars's arms, and now she was too weak to effectively fight back. The restroom door banged open behind him. He whirled, expecting to see the befuddled face of Ed, here to investigate the racket, and he already had a story prepared. "I slipped on the wet floor. I think I hit my head." Only it wasn't Ed standing there in the doorway. It was Lars. Ashley kicked the plastic bag. "Oh, come on!"
"You sounded like you, needed help." "Yes, I needed you out there."
"Oh."
Out there, Ashley pointed furiously. Outside, not inside.
Lars's eyes widened, darting from his big brother to the empty window. He realized what he'd done, what he'd allowed to happen, and his face crumpled and reddened with sloppy tears.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
Ashley kissed him on the lips.
Focus, baby brother. He slapped his cheek. The parking lot. That's where she's running right now.
He hoped he could still run, too. His lower back throbbed where the redhead had slammed him into the porcelain sink. And as he collected his senses, he noticed something else. A sudden lightness in his right jeans pocket. His lanyard was gone. And the bitch took our keys.
Darby tumbled down the stacked picnic tables, landing hard. She dropped Ashley's keys in the snow, but recovered them, clambering upright. The red lanyard had become hooked around her thumb in the scuffle. Pure luck, really. When she'd charged him into the sink and broken free, the payload of chattering keys came with her. Now she had them, and he didn't. They jingled in her palm, a half-dozen mismatched keys, and a black thumb drive. She stuffed the whole handful into her pocket as a new plan took shape. What's better than running for help? Stealing the abductor's van and driving for help. With Jay inside. A desperate gamble. She was still in shock, her fingers still slick with sweat, her breaths still surging, her mind racing with panicked thoughts. She wasn't sure if their Astro could drive any further than Blue could in Snowmageddon, but she'd sure as hell try. She'd stomp the gas, rock the four-wheel drive on its shocks, try everything. She had no other options. If she stayed here at Whanapani, Ashley and Lars would murder her. She circled the building, wading through snowdrifts, and the night air stung her throat. She passed the crowd of half-buried nightmare children to her left, chewed bronze forms in the darkness, pit bull mauling victims frozen in playtime. That bare flagpole, wobbling under another gust of razor wind. Ahead, the parking lot. The cars, their van, just another 50 feet. The visitor center's front door squeaked open behind her. A rectangle of projected light, and she cast a staggering shadow on the snow. A pair of crunchy footsteps followed her. The door shut, and her shadow vanished.
No, Ashley's voice, firm, like he was scolding a dog. Don't shoot her.
She slipped, slashing a knee on jagged ice. Kept running. The pursuing footsteps flanked her now, one moving right, one cutting left, like wolves encircling their prey. She recognized them by their breathing, the congested pant of Lars on the left, the controlled huffs of Ashley on the right. She kept running and focused on the Astro, keys jangling in her hand.
Lars, don't shoot her!
She's trying to steal the van!
You want a yellow card?
She slipped again, catching herself. Her purse bounced off her knee. Just 10 paces from the kidnapper's vehicle now. She could see the cartoon fox on the side, racing closer, still holding that orange nail gun.
She won't get anywhere. The snow is too deep.
What if she does?
She won't.
What if she does, Ashley?
Darby skidded, reaching the driver door, her heart thudding in her throat. She palmed snow off the lock and fumbled for the keychain. But it was too dark to identify the Chevy key. At least 3 of them felt thick enough to be car keys. She tried the first one. It didn't fit. She tried the second one. It fit, but didn't turn.
She's unlocking the door.
She was on the 3rd key, jamming it into the icy lock, when she noticed something to the left. A minor detail, but wildly wrong. The Astro's rear door. It should have been shut, but it hung ajar, the glass reflecting a scythe of lamplight.
the upper edge collecting a rim of snowflakes. Darby hadn't left it open. It couldn't possibly have been Lars or Ashley. That left... Jay? Lars panted.
She's stopping.
I know.
Why is she stopping?
As both pairs of footsteps drew closer, Ashley understood.
Oh, hell.
1:23 a.m. From her angle, Darby couldn't quite see it. But she knew what Ashley saw. Jay's dog kennel, clumsily sawed apart from the inside. The Astro's rear door pushed open, and a pair of small footprints hitting the snow and leading out into the darkness. He stared, mouth agape with dull shock, before glancing back to Darby.
If she tries to run, shoot her.
She turned, but Lars had already circled the van and appeared behind her with that stubby handgun held waist high, aimed at her stomach. She caught her breath, surrounded again.
I don't believe it.
Ashley paced, his fingers digging into his scalp, and Darby noticed his hairline was every bit as severe as his younger brother's. He just grew his bangs out to cover the receding bits. She couldn't help but feel a grim satisfaction. She loved it. For all of Ashley's smugness and posturing tonight, she'd still managed to hurl one hell of a wrench into their plan. Little Jaybird was loose. Ashley kicked the Astro's side, bruising the metal.
I don't fucking believe it.
Lars edged back. But Darby couldn't resist. Too much white-hot adrenaline in her veins. 2 minutes ago, he'd been asphyxiating her with a plastic bag, and she was still furious about that. Still bristling with reckless energy.
Hey, Ashley, I'm no expert on kidnappings, but doesn't it only work if there's a kid in there?
He turned to face her. She shrugged. Just my amateur opinion.
You, Lars raised his pistol. You should stop.
And you should eat a goddamn breath mint.
Darby looked back to Ashley, her words shivery and raw, unspooling like twine.
Are you sure about that little speech of yours? Helpless humans just letting the big scary monsters do their thing? Because I think I just influenced the plot, motherfucker.
He stomped toward her. She flinched.
Oh, God, this is it. I'm dead.
And Ashley raised the rock in a sock as he charged, winding up for a skull-fracturing impact. But then, at the last instant, he sidestepped past her and threw it. She opened her eyes. He'd been aiming at a streetlight, 200 feet away. After a few airy moments of flight, the rock hit the post squarely, bouncing off the metal with a warbling clang. It echoed twice. Most NFL quarterbacks couldn't do that. Lars whispered.
Magic.
I'm a magic man, Lars, my brother.
They'd been toying with her this entire night, she realized, manipulating her, pretending to be strangers, working the room, dropping flagrant lies and obtuse little hints, and studying how she reacted, like a rat in their maze.
Can you cut a girl in half?
I can, but you only get gold if the girl survives.
That room full of anxious laughter rang again inside her brain, as tinny as microphone feedback. Her migraine was back. Ashley wiped saliva from his mouth and turned back to Darby, his breath curling in the mountain air.
You don't get it yet, Darbs.
It's all right.
You will.
Get what? This gave her a sick chill. Her adrenaline high, her crazy stupid fearlessness, it was all slipping away, fading like a weak buzz. 2 beers, fun while they last, but gone by dessert. Lars peered inside the van.
How long ago did she break out?
Ashley was pacing again.